Welcome, everyone, to the June 9th, 2015 afternoon session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I'm Rico Bishop, and to my left, I'm joined by Chief Judge Frankie Moore, and to my right, by Judge Mike Pirtle. I'd like to remind you that we are live streaming on NET, so if there's anything confidential or sensitive, that will be available publicly, so you may keep that in mind when you're making your arguments today. When I call your case, appellant's attorney may approach. Please wait for me to say the name of the case one more time for purposes of the recording. All right, thank you. Our first case today is Burkholder v. Burkholder. Again, the first case today is Burkholder v. Burkholder. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Johnson. I practice with the law firm of Conway Pauley Johnson in Hastings, Nebraska. I come to you from the land of the floodwaters, just located to the west. Today's case, Burkholder versus Burkholder, was not a particularly complicated case, but became complicated because of errors that were made in the court below that compounded one onto another until the final result was, a complete mess. The facts are as laid out in my statement of facts, and they're important as the outline what the court should have seen over the two-plus years of this life of this case. What you see in that statement of facts is that the appellee in this case was resistant throughout the course of the litigation to even the most simple requests requiring numerous court hearings to decide things that people should normally have just agreed upon. I would encourage you to read my 90-page brief submissions for a more full rendition of the facts as they were laid out. It was very difficult to wean this down to 60 pages, as the court allowed me to do, and I appreciate that.
Can we start with the appointment of Dr. Meidlinger to do his...
custody evaluation?
Yes. Who requested that?
Initially, as you'll see in the record, that was requested by the appellee. She was the one who first made an application for a custody evaluation and first suggested that Dr. Meidlinger be chosen.
Did the appellant consent to Dr. Meidlinger's appointment?
Yes, you will see that there is a secondary filing afterwards where Mr. Burkholder, the appellant in this case, says, yes, we should have an evaluation, and Meidlinger is fine. So that is the order of how things are done. Now, I know that the appellee in her brief said that Mr. Burkholder chose Dr. Meidlinger. That's not true. Nor do I think it really matters to the facts at issue. The fact that a party chooses to use a particular doctor, psychologist, whatever, to do an evaluation, I don't think has any bearing whatsoever on whether or not the party can challenge how that evaluation was later performed.
But aren't you in essence challenging his status as an expert witness?
Well, one of the four areas that you examine when one does a Schaeffer-Smith challenge is competency. But I did not argue that in the brief in terms of the court error when finding that he was competent to do a custody evaluation, even though I think there are no questions as to that. I think the court found that he was competent to do the evaluation.
By you consenting to him being appointed as an expert, are you not in essence stipulating that he is competent to perform the evaluation?
I think he is competent by consenting to him. I think that you admit that he's competent to engage in the work. I don't think that in any way waives your right to challenge how the work was performed. And I think that we have laid out in our brief and the materials that have been submitted to you just how poorly that work was done in terms of Schaeffer-Smith, Daubert, Tumhotar, all those cases that talk about what the court has to look at and what the expert must do in order to produce good, reliable evidence, not junk science. We don't want to get into a situation where you have a person who is supposed to be an expert witness come and give what amounts to essentially a lay opinion, dressed up to look like an expert opinion, because there's no scientific basis that would back that opinion and make it into something that the courts can reasonably rely upon in making its decision. In this particular case, there's no showing but the methodology and the specific application of the methodology that was chosen by Dr. Meininger could be shown to be somehow scientifically valid.
Is it your position that he conducted this evaluation different than other evaluations he had done in the past?
I have no way of knowing.
Had you not had him involved in other cases in the past?
I have not used Dr. Meininger for over 10 years in cases that I'm involved in because of a previous experience I had with him where I thought his methodologies and his manner of going about how he chose to do his work were faulty.
Then why not object to him at the beginning when he was appointed to perform the evaluation?
I was not the attorney at the time. That was another attorney. I came in second. So by the time I was on board, that decision had already been made, and I believe even the evaluation had already been completed.
Didn't Dr. Meininger testify that he'd done about 338 custody evaluations over the course of his career? And if that's the case, had he changed his methodology in this particular case versus what he'd done in the prior 300-some cases?
Well, in Dr. Meininger's report, he says, my methodology hasn't been subjected to peer-reviewed analysis or publication, hasn't been ever tested. No one's ever watched me do this. I've never done any of those things that Schaeffersman says we must do. He says, but I think it's reliable because I always ask the same questions.
Didn't he say that he followed the APA guidelines for custody evaluations?
But when taken back to the APA guidelines, which were received into evidence, by the way, the APA guidelines themselves state these are not guidelines. These are aspirational statements. They're not, this is what you will do, this is what you won't do. They're not guidelines in the true sense that we would consider them to be guidelines, and they say that themselves. Now, the court did receive other peer-reviewed guidelines that are true guidelines that say this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, including the discussion of the use of the MMPI-2 in custody cases, and these other guidelines that the court received in evidence say you're not supposed to use the MMPI-2 for custody cases because it's the wrong test.
Would you say that's your biggest beef with his methodology is the use of the MMPI?
No, it would not.
Okay, what is your biggest beef?
He only used one objective measurement, that being the MMPI-2, which I would say it's a faulty test, not supposed to be used, and the guidelines state that. But then he also chooses to only interview people on the phone whom he's never met, talks to them for a few minutes, can't even remember what they said. He reviews documents that are submitted by other folks, does his own observation of the parties and the children, and then comes up with his opinion. He doesn't use any objective measurements that are designed for custody evaluations. The whole process is flawed from beginning to end as far as how he does things or did things in this particular case.
Well, he testified, didn't he, that he did clinical interviews with the parties. He observed the parents with the children.
He did. And he also admitted in direct examination in the deposition, which I would encourage you to read, Exhibit 24, as well as his cross-examination, that this methodology that he has chosen, he essentially made up himself. And that's not sufficient under Schaeffersman. You have to choose a methodology that's been peer-reviewed, recognized by others, to be valid and reliable, something that's going to give you good information. That's what he needed to do. He didn't do that. He made up this methodology that he chose to use, and then he made up how to apply that methodology to the facts at issue.
Does Schaeffersman stand for the proposition that you must have a peer review methodology in every case?
No, and Schaeffersman will tell you that peer-reviewed analysis and publication is not the only standard that one looks at. But Daubert, Humeltier, and Schaeffersman will tell you that you have to have some grounding in what you do in a scientific method, and talks in great detail about the scientific method and why that is important. So you just can't make it up, which is what he admitted that he did in this case. Now, it is important when we talk about the Schaeffersman challenge and what the court did say when the court overruled the Schaeffersman motion. Specifically, the court stated that I've never seen a published opinion regarding the admissibility of testimony of a psychologist. doesn't exist, so there's nothing to apply. He agreed with the argument of the appellee that no court engages in the extensive analysis as advocated by the appellant as to the applicability of specific chairperson standards to a psychologist's testimony. He says the court agrees with that assessment. And then the court cited an unpublished opinion, which clearly one's not supposed to do. He said that Dr. Monnier is competent, testified for years, but you don't vouch for an expert. That's not how you find the information is reliable or the method process is reliable. You don't vouch for a witness.
Was that the basis of the motion to recuse then?
That was part of the basis. And one of the issues that we had, and I read the brief of the appellee, is, well, you didn't raise the issue of the recusal soon enough. What the appellee doesn't say is, when did I have enough to meet this heavy burden that I would have to recuse the judge? You know, I think there were a combination of things that went on. One by itself is not enough. Two by itself, not enough. I mean, it's a very heavy burden to ask a judge, and a very difficult thing to do, to ask a judge to recuse himself. But once the judge said, I'm not going to give you the records of Dr. Monitor, who I think the court fought very hard to preserve his testimony. I'm not going to give you his records, even though the trial is 4 months away, because your discovery deadline has passed. Even though earlier Dr. Monitor had changed his testimony and cited a propensity for violence, and said that was based on his results of the MMPI-2, which later testimony showed was not the case at all.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Jesse Krause. I'm with Rembold Luckey Law Firm here in Lincoln. And I represent the defendant and appellee in this matter, Heather Carroll. Appellant presents a number of issues on appeal, but I think as is clear from reviewing the briefs and listening to the oral arguments here this morning, that the main issue that he's presenting on appeal is that the district court judge for Phelps County, Judge Illingworth, abused his discretion when he awarded Ms. Carroll physical custody of the children and admitted the testimony and opinion of Dr. Meilinger into evidence. However, all the court really needs to do to resolve this issue is to look at the district court's final decree of dissolution in this matter. It's an extremely detailed and thorough analysis of the thorough analysis as it relates to determination of physical custody. The court talked about the observation of witnesses and applied the various facts of the case to the law, and it's a very well thought out and thorough decision. Even if there was an error in admitting Dr. Meilinger's testimony, which Ms. Carroll strongly denies, the court even acknowledges in its final decree that Dr. Meilinger's opinion was only a small part of the reason that it awarded custody to Ms. Carroll. And in fact, the district court did not actually follow the entire opinion of Dr. Meilinger because Dr. Meilinger actually recommended that the parties, that Ms. Carroll be recommended sole legal and sole physical custody, but the court awarded the parties joint legal custody.
And is it, my understanding is you have cross-appealed on that issue, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And the reason why we have cross-appealed on legal custody, because we believe that the overwhelming evidence presented at trial shows that joint legal custody is not in the minor children's best interest and is not workable between the parties. I believe the evidence that was presented at trial showed that. Under the temporary order, Ms. Carroll was awarded temporary legal custody of the children. And the record shows that Mr. Burkholder and Ms. Carroll had a very difficult time making fundamental decisions for the children under the period of the temporary order. These decisions include healthcare decisions. There was issues as to whether or not the children had allergies. Mr. Burkholder, even though Ms. Carroll had sole legal custody, signed the kids up and took them to medical appointments without her consent or knowledge during the period of the temporary order. He also fought with her on whether or not and when the kids should start kindergarten. So when you have fundamental decisions that can't be made on education and healthcare, I think that's going to be a real problem for the parties in the long run, and I think that evidence was in front of the court at trial. There's also evidence that Mr. Burkholder was difficult and argumentative during exchanges, and that testimony comes from Ms. Carroll and a third-party neutral observer, Mr. Adams, who testified at trial. Klimek v. Klimek, which is 18 Nebraska Court of Appeals 82, which is a case that states that communication is an essential requirement for joint custody. And I think that's what the evidence showed at trial, is that these parties could not communicate with each other. I think
was that case you just cited for joint physical custody or joint legal custody?
It says that communication is an essential requirement for joint custody. I believe the parties in that case had joint legal custody. I do not know if they had joint physical custody.
It's interesting that you're asking us to find an abuse of discretion with regard to the legal custody determination, but not with regard to the physical custody determination by the judge.
That is interesting. But if you look at Judge Illingworth's analysis, it all plays towards the facts that he cites to really relate more towards physical custody. And he actually he talks about Mr. Burkholder's anger issues, but doesn't discuss the difficulties that the parties had in making decisions. And I think it's almost like it was so focused on physical custody, which we believe the court got correct, but legal custody was almost an afterthought. And also, there was a credible finding of abuse by the court. The court found that at a minimum there was an emotional abuse by Mr. Burkholder against Ms. Carroll during the marriage. And that's laid out in the judge's decree. And under although the judge Judge Illingworth still found there was joint legal custody, and there's a case that came out after the briefs were submitted in late February by the Supreme Court. It's Flores v. Flores Guerrero, 290 NEB 284. And under that Supreme Court case, it says that under Nebraska Revised Statute Section 43-2932, when a parent has committed a domestic intimate partner abuse, the court shall not order legal or physical custody to be given to that parent without making a special written findings that the child and the other parent can be adequately protected. In Flores v. Flores Guerrero, there was joint physical joint physical custody and joint legal custody. The Supreme Court found the district court didn't make such specific findings to protect for potential harm to the other parent and the children. And in that case, because it didn't have that specific language, the Supreme Court found there was a failure by the district court precluding it from making its joint custody determination. So,
in your motion for new trial or alter amend, did you make a request with regard to the legal custody? Do you recall?
I don't recall, Your Honor.
That's right.
What I'd like to ask, just for clarification, is at the time this case went to trial, I assume your position was you wanted sole legal and physical custody. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
What was the position of the other side at that time? Were they seeking joint legal and physical custody?
I believe Mr. Burkholder was seeking joint legal custody. I believe he was seeking physical custody of the children. But I apologize. I should know that, but I wasn't counsel at trial, so I'm just trying to recall.
So the parties were on notice that joint legal custody, at least, was a potential outcome.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Burkholder argues that the district court erred in overruling his Schaeferzman challenge and erred in allowing Dr. Meilinger to testify at trial. However, Dr. Meilinger did testify that the methodology that he used to conduct the child custody evaluation was established in the psychology field. He talked about his methodology was specifically conducting clinical interviews, clinical observations of the parents and the children interacting, and the clinical interviews were with the parents. He did the psychological testing, which in this case included the MMPI, and he also gathered information from collateral sources. He testified that clinical interviews and clinical observations had been used in custody evaluations since the 1950s, and that the MMPI was used as and accepted by psychologists since the 1950s. Now, there was a statement that the issue was, appellant has an issue with Dr. Meilinger only using one objective test, but Dr. Cynthia Toff was called on rebuttal by the appellant during trial, and on cross-examination, she stated that a couple of standards that are used by custody evaluators actually show that, I'll cite one is the model standards of practice for child custody evaluations, and that's Exhibit 109. And those standards show that the formal assessment instrument is within the discretion of the child custody evaluator, and that the formal use of assessment instruments is not always necessary. And she admitted that those standards are accepted within the field of clinical psychology, the model standards of practice for child custody evaluations. And then also Exhibit 125 is the summary of practice parameters for child custody evaluations. Those also state that in most cases, psychological testing for the parents is not required. So there's different guidelines out there, and I think Dr. Cynthia Toff had some issues with him using only the MMPI, but then there's also some guidelines out there that say that it's up to the discretion of the person giving the child custody evaluation.
Was there some evidence that the MMPI-2 should not be used in custody evaluations?
Well, I believe Dr. Cynthia Toff may have testified to that, but Dr. Meilinger testified that it's been used and accepted by clinical psychologists, and that other psychologists that he works with in continuing education workshops that they use that method to it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't believe Mr. Johnson has any time. Thank you very much. The case is submitted.